off the ball.
Rugby.
It's the first time I've seen a real confidence and a swagger in their attack. Cohesion in passing and stuff, and that's quite telling.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. Coming up, we're going to get the dream team of Gerry Thornley and Andy Dunn here in studio from 8 o'clock until 9 o'clock for, a celebratory Monday Night Rugby. I think the lads have been celebrating over the last couple of days. We're going to hear about their 48 hours in London. They've had a pretty good time, to say the very least, after Ireland went and double scored England at Twickenham on Saturday afternoon. From 9 to 10, we've got a live football show with Kevin Kilbane on the line from Canada. He's going to reflect on the North London Derby. He's going to talk about James Milner breaking the Premier League appearances record over the course of the weekend as well. And we've also got Ben Symes and Vinnie Perth at Rovers versus Dundalk this evening. We'll also be keeping up to speed on everything that happens at the Hill Dickinson Stadium between Everton and Manchester United in the Premier League. For the next hour, it is our extended news round, as is our custom of a Monday. Tommy Rooney is going to be with us for the second half of the news round to fill us in on all the GAA details over the course of the weekend, from Colby MacDonald to Kieran McGeaney. And we've got a special report. We had a special reporter at St. Connolly's Park over the course of the weekend watching Kildare versus Clare. Clare hurlers over the course of the weekend. So you can make your own mind up as to who that special reporter might be. Michael McCarthy, how are you?
Division 1B. It's where it's at, baby.
Nothing.
Yeah, save the good stuff.
Yeah,
save the good stuff. Stephen Doyle, how are you doing?
I'm all good, thank you. Funny you mentioned the rugby there. Myself and Brian Kerr flying into London yesterday for the North London Derby. Genuinely, we flew over Twickenham at around, what was it? It must be
like the opposite of the Red Arrows. Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr flying over
10 in the morning, and I looked down. I swear to God, I probably could see some Irish stragglers still celebrating on Sunday morning that brilliant win at Twickenham on Saturday. So I hope they enjoy themselves.
God, I hope they weren't still out there 24 hours later.
Yeah,
get into London.
The hospitality tent just never shuts outside Twickenham. They were still there drinking Guinness in a plastic glass. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you want to drop us a WhatsApp message, we'd love to hear your reaction to Saturday. Did you call it? Did you in fact predict that England were no good and that Ireland were actually great? Because I think we're scrambling around now to find little shreds of evidence that...
Oh, hold on now. Sorry, shreds of evidence. Anybody listen, right? Do you remember Steve-O messed up the line and couldn't get we couldn't get the first 10 minutes of Derry and Bowes on Friday night?
Yes.
And when we were doing that, me and you decided, let's have a bit more of a chat about the rugby. And what did we do?
I went into a trance and I don't remember what I said.
We basically laid out... The problem is, I'm reading in the papers yesterday that there was a nobody believes in us. This is one of the biggest shocks. Nobody saw this coming, etc, etc, etc. Well, I'll tell you who saw it coming. You saw it coming and I saw it coming, because on national radio, listen,
I'll tell you who saw
it. I asked Emma to pull out some audio just to prove it. Emma,
all right.
I wouldn't even say I'd pick Ireland to win.
Hold on.
What? Hang on.
No, that's a stitcher. Right, well, the rest of what we said was suggest. I think what we did was ultimately describe every factor of why Ireland were going to win and then bottle it in terms of picking them.
It was a complete bottle job on our part. Complete, but like we
were fully believing, weren't we?
We laid out the reasons why England are overrated, and we laid out the reasons why Ireland can go and shock them because this is a weird fixture. And then we pulled back at the crucial moment and we said, "No, Ireland will not win this game." So, what use are we? Did you call it, Steve-O?
No. Well, listen, I'm not fully attuned to all the build-up of the Six Nations as I would have been in the past. But everybody thought the Grand Slam was between France and England. Like, that was the whole theme of this year's tournament, and that if Ireland could scrap for third or second place, they'd be doing okay.
Mm.
Like, I'm sorry, lads. That England performance on Saturday was shocking. Absolutely
terrible. The reason
terrible.
I can't believe nobody saw it coming was because we saw that England performance 7 days before. They were like, it was the same performance as they had in Murrayfield. Now everyone's like, that Scotland-England fixture is weird. Scotland always beat them in Murrayfield, but they were terrible. They, like, in the same way, they completely capitulated after like 15 minutes in that game, and the game was kind of over and it played out then, you know, for the next 60 in its own way, but England were never going to win the game. And it was the exact same in Twickenham on Saturday. They were never going to win after. So it's like there was a way over the top belief in an England team that when I saw it named on Tuesday, I was like, it's not that great. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I know George Ford's in good form, but it kind of felt like they moved on from him 5 years ago. And here they are, you know, again. And obviously George Ford had a sting, like one of those games that you remember forever. It'll almost be associated with them. It was so poor. But loads of players around the pitch, like, they're only okay, England, like, you know, on their best day. And it certainly wasn't anywhere near their best day. But I think more importantly, from our point of view, like, we were waiting for some kind of inspiration from this Irish team, and it's been a while since we've seen it. And that was an exciting display. You know, when like Tommy O'Brien, James Lowell started really well, by the way, so it's in no mark against him. But when Tommy O'Brien came on, I can't remember the last time I saw two Irish wingers working in tandem. I think maybe when Hansen would pop up on the other wing early in his days, but it felt like Balakoon and O'Brien were somehow working off each other, mm-hmm. both offensively and defensively. Obviously, Balakoon's amazing covering try, O'Brien or covering tackle. You know, O'Brien was working back for him. It was just really exciting. You had all the line breaks. You had just good rugby, like, you know. And we were back. We were back to choke tackles. We were back to Doris and Tyke Byrne jackling. It was just a real Irish Andy Farrell display.
I do think the England story, if you are a neutral, which we're not really, is as big a story, if not the story from Saturday. But I do think you can be objective and look at what Ireland have done since Paris. And over the course of 16 days, I think Tommy O'Brien's a perfect example. He had a really tough evening mm-hmm. at Stade de France, and he comes back 16 days later, is thrown straight into play the majority of a game that he wouldn't have expected to play more than 20, 30 minutes of, and was absolutely sensational. You look at what Andy Farrell did in terms of his week two selection. No Jamison Gibson-Park, no Josh van der Vleer. They come in and...
No Tyke Byrne.
Mm. Gibson-Park in particular comes back in and puts in an all-time great performance.
I thought the three of them were brilliant. Gibson-Park levels above nearly anybody, but all three of them played really well.
And he dropped in the "this team didn't show enough fight" bomb after the Paris game, which was a risky enough strategy from Farrell. You know, he was there for November, but he was away all last year. And to come back in and say something like that, I would say I don't know the inner workings of the squad, but I would say no matter what squad it is, that's a brave enough thing to do. It shows his own trust in his own abilities and the power that he has in that dressing room, but also his trust in how the players would actually respond to it. And that was the thing. Like, even when, in all seriousness, when we're listening back to what we were saying last Friday, that's the thing that I didn't actually trust in. I'm like, how can these two dots go from here to here in the space of just 2 weeks? And that being a real upward trajectory. Maybe over the course of a period of time, trending towards the World Cup, something like that might have happened. But I didn't see it coming between Paris and London. It's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And just another mention, because we're talking about like Andy Farrell's leadership here and all. I think there was some brilliant displays, and they've all made the headlines. And we'll hear from Stuart McCluskey in a few minutes on how good he was. And, you know, there was a lot of contenders for man of the match in a game where Jamison Gibson-Park probably had his best ever game for Ireland. You know, that's how well we played. But I just think, if we're talking about leaders, I feel like Caelan Doris has got a lot of criticism. Some of it's quiet, but I feel like it's been there for the last few months. And obviously he's coming back. He's not that long back from a really, really bad injury. His performance was one that I had almost forgotten was in him. You know what I mean? It was just that. It was just levels above how he's played since he's come back from his injury. And that can take time when you've had an ACL. That actually is pretty normal for it to take 5 or 6 months till you kind of get back to your best. So you sort of forget sort of what a player we have in him as well. Like, obviously missed the Lions where he might have been captain and so on. So again, I think that's one that's probably, because there were so many good performers, it probably hasn't got too many headlines.
Like, not to strike a bum note on it now, like, but I'm not sure if I'm completely subscribing to the whole corner turned thing and this kind of opening the floodgates for Ireland to get back to...
Many players would you think we'd need to beat them?
Actually, this is a perfect opportunity for us to like talk ourselves down over the next the next 2 weeks.
You do.
I just think that we're not. It's not necessarily just a free ticket back to number one in the world over the next year and a half. I do think there are,
but some signs of hope, which we probably were just, we were feeling like we were going the other way.
Yeah, sure. But I think what we've actually discovered just as equally on Saturday is that it's not South Africa, France, and England at the top of the world. It's South Africa and France.
Yeah, I would say New Zealand would be a bigger worry for me than England.
100%.
Well, England went and beat New Zealand during last November. It was reasonable going into this year's Six Nations to have England on a pedestal above New Zealand. Neither of them are on that level of the top two teams. But can Ireland strive to be on England's level going into the next World Cup? I would say yes. Can they strive to be on New Zealand's level?
I think
a far less clear question given the coaching turnover that's going to happen there in the next year.
You have to judge a team by how they do against everybody and not just each other. But I think I wouldn't back against Ireland against I wouldn't back against Ireland playing England at any point now. Like they battered them in the Aviva last year as well. You know, that was before we realised that we were kind of on a slight slide and so on. But England scored two tries in the last 2 minutes of that game to make a scoreline look a lot closer than it actually was. Really should have beaten them in Twickenham 2 years before and cost ourselves back-to-back Grand Slams. That was, I would say, more on Ireland than it was on England that day. You know, so it's just like, are England really better than us? Ronan O'Gara, famous clip that we used to play at the start of the show here, are the English players really better than the Irish players?
Yeah, like they were... Like, you do have to caveat the Irish thing with the fact that England were so bad. Like, the amount of clear breaks those Irish... How many times have we seen an Irish player just streaking behind England with, like, you know, 30, 40 yards of green grass in front of them? Like, that was just... England were just so, so bad. And you kind of felt sorry for Itoje nearly at one stage, the way he's kind of gone up to the referee looking for some sort of reason to complain about some decision. And it was just... That's all they had. They were completely, completely hopeless. Gibson Park was just, it was one of those really, like, insanely inspirational performances from a player. You felt that really lifted his whole team. And, like, every time you looked at him, he was like, I thought his performance should have been soundtracked by AC/DC. It was that kind of, if you could, like, it was just like, all I could hear was AC/DC in my head every time I looked at Gibson Park. It was just pure balls out rock and roll performance from the scrum half. Like, it was absolutely amazing. Amazing stuff.
I must say as well, again, not to be overly neutral on this, but I thought Alex Mitchell at the early exchanges, I was like, that's the one good England player out there right now. He is the person keeping them in this game. He's keeping them ticking forward, and he was just such a massive loss for them when he went off. 087-9180-180 is our number. Patrick's been in touch to say, great win for Ireland yesterday, but is this a false dawn for an ageing team, or is it a beautiful sunset on a lot of these guys' careers? Neither of those things are good.
they're not that old either, though, this Irish team, you know.
Larry says, well, men, just on our weekend win versus England, can we all agree, had we a fully fit squad, Farrell would not have picked five or six of those players who stood up and were counted on Saturday. If Bundy was fit, not available, McCluskey doesn't play. Same for Hansen and Balakoon. If Hansen was fit, Balakoon wouldn't played, says Larry. Had Sam not have had two mares, Crowley doesn't start. Having this argument with lads in work today, and I was on my own. Thoughts? I think Bundyakian form and not being suspended or not being disciplined, I think probably would have been a strong contender. But Stuart McCluskey was excellent against New Zealand last year. He'd really gone up in the pecking order last year. And I think we were talking about Bundyaki, just like we were talking about Jamison Gibson Park a couple of months ago as well. We could easily have been proven wrong by Bundyaki going out and destroying England and Twickenham at the weekend. That's the parallel universe there.
Forget what the players who were missing could have done, yeah. I think someone like Rob Balakoon, by all accounts, is someone that, he needed something to happen to get a chance. But he's... injury is just curtailed every time he's had that chance before, but he's taken it, and that's just what has to happen. I don't think you can go, like, these hypotheticals of what a coach would have done, that happens sometimes. It's whether those players are equipped to go and take it, you know, when they get that chance.
He's
in the team now, though.
Without question. D says, Ireland were superb, but England were absolutely appalling. George Ford's kicks early on summed it up perfectly. George Ford was seeing ghosts on Saturday afternoon.
George Ford kicked the ball, so he missed touch. Then he kicked it dead. And then when he basically kicked it out sideways and missed the 5 metre line by about 8 metres. And Twickenham erupted in, like, that's embarrassing stuff. Like, not to mention he kept taking the ball into contact when there was no need to and getting overturned.
Yeah.
It was an awful performance.
So, the English rugby fan does turn on their own pretty quickly, I must say. Like, the same thing happened with Owen Farrell at the last World Cup. And that was for far more unjustifiable reasons. Like, at least... a sense of support for Ford wouldn't have given Ireland that little bit of an extra kick, I reckon, on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, but it seemed like it was all getting away. Can I just mention one time while we're talking about England and their poor performance, as much as we can have the argument of good for the game versus annoying little you-know-what, like, can we all just agree it's satisfying that Henry Pollock had a terrible game?
Yeah.
Because it was against us, you know what I mean?
If you want to think
about what he means for the wider game, and I'll work away, that's fine. I don't mind it. I don't disagree. Nice to see him kind of getting a little bit of...
what I'm about to say is completely unfair, but he provides very easy motivation for opponents.
Of course he does.
And it's like...
his head.
It's our fault as well. It's to our fault or to our credit as well. He's such a talking point in the pre-match media dealings that, like, the captain of the opposing team tends to get bombarded with a few questions about Pollock. And there's just a little psychological aspect
there. Oh, I listened
to
Doris's full press conference on Friday, and there was a lot of Henry Pollock questions.
I'll get to a few more of your comments in a moment because they keep rolling in. Steve-O, you are starting with the rugby this evening, and we're going to hear from one of the players involved on Saturday.
Indeed, Owen, one of the moments of the match for Ireland fans was the sight of Marcus Smith giving the England kit man some extra work in the laundry room this week after he spotted the burly figure of Stuart McCloskey running toward him as he streaked down the wing at Twickenham. The Ireland centre was bashful regarding his bashing of the England out half.
I probably ran back in hope more than expectation, and as I got closer, I was like, oh, flip, I'm actually going to get him. But yeah, I was absolutely cooked after it, and I have basically a body bag for the last 5 minutes, but thankfully the game was won. It was a great performance. I think we proved a lot of people wrong. We probably proved to ourselves, more importantly, what we can do when we get stuff right. Probably more we wanted to prove to ourselves how good we are. Obviously, a lot of things didn't go right over the last two rounds. And some went well, and we got it right. I thought we looked really good, but it just didn't really piece it all together. But I thought today we pieced a lot of what we wanted to do together, and I thought it was pretty good all round.
Yeah, Stuart McCloskey there, and we have an update from the Ireland rugby squad as well today, Steve-O.
Yeah, the players are having a couple of days well-deserved rest after demolishing England in London. Ireland wing James Lowe went off with an injury at Twickenham, with the scan revealing that was a groin problem. He'll continually be monitored ahead of the visit of Wales to Dublin on Friday week. Jack Conan will return to training this week after missing the win over England due to illness. He'll be involved in a two-day camp being held in Dublin by head coach Andy Farrell and his staff. Harry Byrne, Edwin Adogbo and Cormac Izichukwu are just some of a number of players returning to their respective provinces for URC action this weekend. Now, analysing the game for Off the Ball this morning on Off the Ball Breakfast, the former Leinster, Ulster and Scotland coach Matt Williams was very impressed by out-half Jack Crowley, who of course replaced Sam Prendergast for the England game.
A good 10 underplays their role and brings other people into the game. And I'm a great fan of both of these young men, right? I really hate making comments as if you're putting them down. They're just young guys developing. Mm. You know, and I think Sam Prendergast is going to be a fabulous player. So if we say, did Stuart McCloskey have a great game? He did. You've got to thank your 9 and 10 inside him when the guys outside are having good games, because the 9 and 10 are bringing them into the game. And that's what I think. I felt Jack really underplayed his end. Probably a few kicks I would have liked him not to have done. What Jack does better than anyone, he's a great defender. Mm. And on Quinny's point before, they definitely have gone away from the Leinster defence, and they've gone back to the way Irish teams of war have defended probably the last 15, 20 years, which is really solid. And Jack played his part in that as well. I think it was a really positive day for them. But your point about underplaying your hand, that's what Sam's got to learn, you know, and he will get there. And that's confidence, that's self-belief, that's saying, I don't need to do that. And then you look at, and we come back to Jalabert. He's bringing in the other players in that French back line superbly, and then having the confidence to run himself. It's taken him 8 years.
Yeah, Matt Williams speaking there. You can get that full piece back wherever you get your Off the Ball podcast. Now we're going to move on to football in the news round in just a moment. There's a game tonight in the League of Ireland Premier Division, a game tonight in the Premier League. We have a commentary team, a reporting team down at Shamrock Rovers versus Dundalk. Ben Symes and Vinnie Perth are down there. Can I say a very good evening, first of all, to Ben. How are you doing, Ben?
All good. How are you?
Very well. So talk us through this fixture tonight then. Rovers obviously up and running as of last weekend, last Friday night, obviously getting up to a 2-0 win at home to St. Patrick's Athletic. We'll come to the Dundalk Drogheda story in just a moment with Vinnie, but talk to us about Rovers. What did we see last Friday? What can we expect tonight?
Well, Owen, you're going to see a completely different team.
We'll get back to Ben there in a moment. I think maybe the old second mic needs to be turned on there at Tallaght Stadium. Steve-O, in the meantime, you might fill us in on what's become the story of the day. I think sport has had its crossover moment once again. These sort of strange stories that tend to spill out into the rest of the agenda.
Yeah, of course, the Louth derby has received a lot of attention since that happened on Friday night. Dundalk and Drogheda United sharing the points in a 1-1 draw. But there was an incident before the game on which Patrick O'Donovan, the Minister for Sport, has been on various media outlets and also doing a doorstep this afternoon regarding the AstroTurf pitch. A new pitch, of course, at Oriel Park, costing £500,000, which was a grant from the government. The Minister for Sport, though, has paused funding for artificial surfaces now at all League of Ireland clubs. The Minister was asked how many clubs were waiting for funding for artificial surfaces. He was waiting for that information for the departments, or from the particular departments. Now, I've been on to the FAI just to check to see how many other places are waiting for artificial surfaces. From my count, I think there's two other surfaces, a training pitch and also three training pitches altogether that are waiting on funding from around the league. Now, O'Donovan was in attendance for the Louth derby, ahead of which flares were thrown onto the pitch at Oriel Park. A 12-year-old supporter received medical treatment after they were struck by a flare thrown by United fans. He was in with the United fans, and the minister has sought a meeting with Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan, and had set up another meeting with the FAI and League of Ireland for this week. Now, speaking on RTE this morning, he said, "Unfortunately now, it's a plague on all their houses," something he elaborated on at a doorstep today.
No.
How many matches have you attended since you were
I don't there? Keep track of them, but I've been at a fair few. But I can tell you, I've never seen the likes of this, where a brand new field being opened with a €500,000 investment from the government was set fire to. It was the. I don't think anybody should be trying to in any way condone or apologise for what happened there. So I've spoken to the department in Killarney and the department in Dublin with this. We'll get that data, but at the moment, any and all League of Ireland clubs that have in the process of drawing down or in the process of going out to tender, anything like that with regard to an AstroTurf, that has to be stopped. We cannot have a situation where synthetic material is literally set on fire in front of us and then so who's going to pay the bill to replace it? So until such time as I get assurances from the League of Ireland and the FAI with regard to future government investment and the protection of that investment, it's paused. They have to come back to me with a plan, and they also have to come back now with a plan as to how the criminal damage in Dundalk is going to have to be repaired. The current policy of trying to detect flares going into matches clearly isn't working. The current system clearly isn't working, and unless I feel that people are going to be safe going to a match, we're going to have to act accordingly. I've been in touch with the Minister for Justice as well around this.
Right, we'll come back to Rovers Dundalk in a moment with Ben, but alongside him there is Vinnie Perth. Vinnie, how are you doing?
Good evening, how are you on?
All good. Your initial reaction to Patrick O'Donovan's comments there definitely feels very heavy-handed in terms of the language that he's been using since Friday night.
Yeah, I'm a little bit... I'd like to think there's a bit of scare tactics from the minister there in terms of don't do this again, and almost like a helping hand, if that makes sense. I'm trying to see the good in the comments, because I'm standing here in a wonderful stadium, Talla Stadium, built by the local council, obviously supported by Shamrock Rovers, but by and large it was built by the council. What's he suggesting? If somebody rips up a few seats here tonight and throws them over a fence, then what? We stop building it facilities, or if they do that at a rugby game in the RDS, it's just nonsense. Like, but look, I'd like to think he's trying to scare people. It's part of a bigger thing. Like, flares are a bit of a scourge on a game. They bring atmosphere, there's no doubt about that. I generally like them, but they are dangerous because of what it is and where they're being. Look, League of Ireland is generally run by volunteers a lot of the way around the game management, and it is really hard for the clubs to police this stuff. So we need a hand. A lot of police do be there. The fire brigade were there at Dundalk and still couldn't do anything about it. So a couple of people's stupidity shouldn't punish the rest of the league for that and destroy it the league is trying to make. I'm not sure how I can best sort of understand the minister's comments other than to say they sound ridiculous, and I just hope he's trying to play a bigger game.
Well, he might be, or else he's speaking truthfully and we have to take what he says at face value, which is how I would generally operate with a person on the cabinet table. So he is essentially freezing funding of these astro/synthetic pitches for the time being, and he's holding back funds, essentially affecting policy on sport in this country as a result of a couple of idiots on Friday night.
Yeah, and that's and that has to be... Look, I think there's a bigger thing at play here. Forget the badges for a moment, okay? Particularly while I'm speaking, because people might associate me with one badge in this story, right? So forget the badges. This was an act of vandalism, and also a bit, there was an element of danger to it in terms of a young 12-year-old child has been affected by this. That's the big thing in it all for me. There was an act of vandalism by some people, and it's not good enough. It has to be sort of a watershed moment or a red line within the league. And there's two parts at play. One is somebody decided it was a good idea to throw this flare onto a plastic pitch, knowing the damage it would cause. I mean, it's happened once or twice up in Ireland before, but to happen at sort of such a big moment for the club in terms of the minister there to actually do the grand opening of it, and within a couple of minutes is damaged. And also then, I think for the League of Ireland, I think it's such a bad story, and the minister's comments are part of that. Why is it such a bad story? Because we've come a long way, okay? We've come a really long way as a league. But we've only come a long way because we are coming from such a low ebb. We actually haven't come that far. And I think back a couple of weeks ago, there was a lot of noise around somebody called our grounds Kips. And when I played, they were Kips. And they probably haven't changed overly. But what they have done is they've become full of passion, full of sort of local togetherness, all of those big things that you want. And that sort of gets us away with what they are. They're sort of tremendous places to be on a Friday night, whether it's in Dalymount, whether it's in Oriel Park, they're part of the community. And what these idiots have done the other night, or thugs have done the other night, has sort of not helped us, and not helped the sort of building of the game. And for that reason, I'm really disgusted. But I think there's a bigger problem in League of Ireland. I think we've got to be careful. We've got to continue to build the game. And that's why I used the line, we've come in from a low ebb and we have to continue to grow, because we need to get kids into our game. We need to get parents to continue to bring people to our games. We have to be able to share the Lewis. We have to be able to share trains, buses and pubs and restaurants around games. We call ourselves the greatest fans in the world, you know, when we go support Ireland. But locally, we have to be careful. We're doing everything right. We've had lots of little incidents, fights around pubs. We've had fireworks thrown at people. And we have to continue to build the game. I'll say it one more time. And we can't rely and allow a couple of thugs start to take over a game. And we remember the hooliganism of the 80s and 90s in England. And we're a long way from that. But we got to be careful we don't cross the line. And the other night, the line was crossed. So I understand the minister's frustration. I don't agree with the sentiments. You can't punish everybody, the collective, for a bad decision by those thugs, as I said. So I'm really worried. I'm worried about the situation. And I think this has to be a moment where League of Ireland fans get together. Like, you go to war against your rivals for 90 minutes. I did it, whether it was Cork or Shamrock Rovers. But I respected those people once that 90 minutes was over.
Yeah.
We have to get together now, and what happened isn't good enough. The fans of the league have to sort of cut this nonsense out and sort of self-police a little bit.
Yeah, Finney, it's Mick here. I don't disagree with anything you're saying about the actual actions on Friday night, and even in conversations all day, I'm just like, the whole flares thing in the League of Ireland just annoys me in general. But I think the bigger story here has to be the political overreach of the minister. You know, it's such a massive overreaction, a knee-jerk reaction to him being at the game. And the other thing is, like, this idea that, like, you know, the government investment is this kind of like almost a personal thing that has to be protected. It's kind of nonsense. There's very little investment actually going into football, and I think it is improving, to be honest, and in fairness to the current government. It's improving and it is getting better all the time. But this is picking on a small enough incident in the grand scheme of things to make a really big deal of something. I think it's very political, I have to say. And if you look, there's an article in the Mail on Sunday yesterday. The government, the current cabinet, are spending 30 million euros a year, over 30 million euros a year on communication staff, right? Like, and I'm not saying that all of that can't be, but you can't tell me that isn't money that can be, you know, saved or whatever. You know what I mean? This idea that every penny spent on synthetic grass is this gift given to the people of Ireland, you know, who should worship at the altar of the government who provides for it. You know what I mean? It's a bit nonsense. Like, these things are important investments in the country.
Just back up what you were saying.
Can't stand how political this is for a small enough incident on Friday night.
He did it. The sentence he used this morning on the radio was, I won't be paying for the damage at Oriel Park.
Yeah, it's not. I don't really understand how a minister could have that much power and influence anyway over little individual decisions like how much money goes on synthetic grass in the League of Ireland, I have to say.
Vinny?
Yeah, but can I just say, because I looked in the mirror, and I'm speaking on behalf of, not on behalf of League of Ireland, as a League of Ireland, because I looked in the mirror, Mick, and I criticised the mistakes we're making, I say we, okay, we, yeah. I'm a League of Ireland person, that doesn't, it's easy for me to come on and slag off the minister, okay, and that's fine, I think his comments were nonsense, as I said, but that doesn't mean we can't look in the mirror, Mick.
No, fair,
it doesn't mean we can't say that we allow this tuggery element of our game develop and not call these people out. For me, at the moment, for the week that's in it, that's the biggest issue. We have to have the funding fight continuously, and you're 100% right, and I'm not trying to come away from that. We're the most participated sport in the country, and by our capita we're probably the most underfunded as a result of it, right? So I'm with you on that. I'm just saying, we cannot blame everyone else. It's like the idiots who say serves them right for having a plastic pitch. That's the same sort of thing that drives me up the wall. People think they can just come out with this nonsense. Yes, I completely agree, the minister, his comments, and I'm not going to, it's not your money, pal, it's the people's money, it's anyone that buys anything in the shop or taxpayers, okay, you pay VAT, etc., we all pay our taxes, so it's not your money, but look in the mirror as well. Look in the mirror and say, are we providing everything that we need to? Are we doing things right? And how are we self-policing? Because remember, it's volunteers generally that are policing a lot of these stadiums. It's volunteers that are letting people in, checking tickets, checking pockets, all of that stuff. Okay, so we don't have an industry, yeah? And we have to look in the mirror, Mick. That's all I'm saying. But the minister, I just take that with a pinch of salt. I'm trying to see the rationale in it, saying, is he and the FEI using this as an opportunity to get rid of flares once and for all? I don't know. I'd like to think he's coming up with something on it. But for him to punish an academy club from getting the next part of funding for AstroTurf pitch is a scandal in itself, absolute scandal. But I still have to go back to, some tugs have attacked our game, and they're meant to be our fans, the greatest fans in the world. You are my arse if they're going to behave like that.
John has been in touch to say, lads, regarding the flares at the Drogheda Dundalk game, this is where fans need to stop protecting these idiots. Somebody knows who threw these flares. People are sitting beside and around these morons. Time for fans to stop the omerta. Our number is 087-918-180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Steve, just to round up the football before we go to ads.
Yeah, could I just say quickly on that as well, listen, and he's completely right, the minister, to be, calling out the criminals, as he called them, who threw those flares onto the pitch. That's all well and good. I just think, listen, just the tone, don't be talking down to people like you're a headmaster, and just give the clubs a bit of credit as well, because they did come out with a joint statement condemning all that, and he didn't even mention that as well. Give them a bit of praise to say, look, they're doing their best, they're investigating all this. There needs to be everybody just needs to kind of take it. And he even said, we'll end up with the pitch going up in flames. The pitch isn't going to go up in flames. They are fire retardant. They're designed to be fire retardant, so they're not going to go up in flames. Yeah. But
it's a patchwork repair work. It doesn't all the money goes into what's underneath that.
Let's
chop and replace.
Just need to park that there. We're going to get Tommy Rooney up in the second part of the news round to go through the weekend's Gaelic Games action. And before the ads, it's time for the Cash Machine.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
Now, there was a massive winner in the Cash Machine last Friday, and there's an even bigger amount to be won this week. The number you need to know is €255,000. There are two ways you can enter. You can visit newstalk.com/cashmachine, where you can enter online, or you can text PLAY to 57557. That's 57557. You have to get your entry in by 3 p.m. this Friday, then across the Go Loud network of stations, someone will get that call. If your phone rings, you have to answer it within 5 rings, give us the exact amount in euro and cent, and you'll win the cash. So remember that amount one more time, €255,000. It's for over 18s only. Text costs €2.50 plus your standard message rate to play. You're playing across the Go Loud network of stations, and terms and conditions are on newstalk.com. You're welcome back to our extended news round of Monday evening. It is time to round up the weekend's Gaelic Games action. And Stephen Doyle, you are beginning with the Gaelic football.
Yes, indeed. Donegal kept their unbeaten run in Division 1 of the National Football League. No problems against Armagh, coming out on top with a 120-19 point win. Meanwhile, Monaghan's search for a first win goes on. They fell to a 230-211 loss at home to Mayo. Kobe MacDonald, son of Mayo great Kieran, scored 1-4 off the bench at that game. There was late drama in Salt Hill as Ross Common bested Galway by a point in Division 1 of the National Football League. Kieran Lennon scoring the winner in added time as the visitors came away with a 216-21 point victory. That leaves the Rossies in second place in the table, while Galway remain in fifth position. Meanwhile, Tony Brosnan's goal helped Kerry on their way to a 116-110 win over Dublin at Croke Park on Saturday night. A bit of concern around the Dublin footballers, perhaps from supporters and that kind of thing. But Paddy Andrews on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, speaking to the lads, and this is his assessment of Ger Brennan's time in charge of the Dubs so far.
I don't think any of this is a major surprise. You felt Division 1 was going to be a struggle for this Dublin team. If you look at it right, Dublin, for the last couple of years, we're building towards, there's going to be a huge changing of the player pool. That's just the reality. That team, successful team, would come to the end of its cycle. And whoever the manager was, and it's Ger, was taking over from Desi, was going to have to find probably 12, 13 new players for their squad. But the challenge for Dublin is, it's not just in their squad. When the championship comes around, they're probably going to have at least 6 new players in their first 15. Never mind their squad. They're going to have someone in the full back line, possibly 3 across the half back line. Who plays midfield with Pat O'Coughlin Byrne? That's totally for grabs, and maybe 1 or 2 forward positions. So the turnover, not just in the squad, but in the first 15, is going to be huge. Like, Dublin are going to take the Leinster Championship with probably 6 rookies. That's a massive, massive ask for any team.
Tommy Rooney, our Gaelic Games correspondent, is with us on the line. Evening, Tommy.
Howdy, fellas. How are things?
Just a quick one on that, and feel free to take this anywhere you want for as little time as you'd like, Tommy. Saturday evening, Dublin versus Kerry. This fixture not exactly delivering on the fireworks of previous years. Dublin looking really poor at the moment. We'll see if they manage to turn it around in the coming weeks and months. Maybe it doesn't say a whole pile about Kerry, that they didn't properly put them to the sword on the scoreboard either. So you were there, so give us your quick thoughts there before we get into matters more pressing.
Yeah, I fell for it. I decided to rock up to Croke Park this weekend. And I don't know whether it's because I've been spoiled in the last 18 months with football matches, but it was disappointing. It was poor, it was slow. Kerry were trying to work on a couple of things which they could do at their ease. The Dubs were again trying to blood players and trial and stuff, but it wasn't great. And I think there was far better and more entertaining and interesting football and hurling games around the country at the weekend. So I do think we judge the Dubs at a slightly different standard. I still think they're going to be fine when it comes to the Leinster Championship. Gone back to the pack a little, but we are judging them against possibly the greatest team we've ever seen.
That's totally fair. The standards are pretty high. Can we talk about Kobe? I can't quite tell if this is going to be something that gives Mayo people a real warm sense of joy forevermore, because they got one season of one of their great county men lining out in the green and red of Mayo. Or is it actually just going to be a story that takes a county entrenched in heartbreak deeper into a sense of heartbreak because they've got a little taste of this, and then they're going to have to break up with one another at the end of this year?
I think anyone's exposure to the talent of Kobe MacDonald is a positive. And I say this without any hint of irony. Kobe MacDonald departing to Australia, if and when he does go at the end of the season, if to St Kilda, won't be just Mayo's loss. It'll be a loss to Irish sport. Look at the way this kid announced himself on the national stage. Like, a little bit off Broadway, Clonus, in the middle of February. But like, he just finished the mocks during the week. Lost the Connacht C-final with his school, Gartner Abbey, the week beforehand. Rocked into training on Wednesday. Andy Warren said that he said he wanted to play on Sunday, so we trained again on Friday. Said, right, we're bringing in the panel. But he didn't want to just be in the panel. He wanted to play. This sublime selection of scores he gets. His first touch is to go on this cut off the shoulder and bamboozle a Monaghan defender and clip over a score from the 21, like, on the right, on the run. Glorious. The goal, like, I was speaking to a couple of colleagues who were in Clonus that afternoon, and they were like, the TV doesn't do it justice. Like, there's like a Roberto Carlos-esque whip on the shot because he hits it with the outside of the boot on the run again. Lads, forget about that. Forget about the scores, the touches, the speed of a fella who's about 6'3". It's the celebrations. He's got it all. And like, he's not afraid to embrace the fact that he's Kieran McDonald's son, that his name is Kobe. He has a wristband with the writing legacy on it as well. And you know what? In much to say, I made this point in the pod as well. David Clifford had really good people around him growing up with, you know, with the hype that was on his shoulders and the expectation, and really good people in Kerry that looked after him and helped him. He also had, you know, a really good head on his shoulders too. And it strikes me that Kobe and the manner in which his father and his family and the Mayo management are managing this talent at the minute, he's in a good place. And I just hope we get to see a bit more of him this year, because he, do you know what? He lit up the weekend for me.
Where's he going to play this year for the Mayo seniors?
Oh, I think, like, look, I think he could play in a number of different positions. And like, that's just the potential that's there, right? I feel like we're going to see Kobe McDonald. Like, he top scores for Mayo at the weekend. Mayo scored 230 at the weekend. He top scores in his 15 minutes on the field at 1-4. This fella is a maverick. I have a feeling he's still obviously only 18. Monaghan didn't lay upon him, right? There's bigger tests to come. Yeah. I don't think we're going to see Kobe McDonald every week. I do think that much the same way Jim McGuinness knows his audience and Kieran McGeaney knows his audience, Andy Moran knows his audience, and I'd have a feeling when Armagh rock into town in Castlebar this Sunday, the Mayo home support will be expecting to see a bit of Kobe as well. Where he play on, one of the three up.
Okay.
Like, you're going to have to put somebody marking him, because he's got all the attributes and the skill to pull it off.
Talk to us about McGuinness versus McGeaney yesterday, Tommy. This was as entertaining in the tunnel after the match as it was on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, good game of football, but we breeze by the football. You know, McGuinness is making the point afterwards. Jim McGuinness and Kieran McGeaney are always a story after these games. We don't want to be the story, but they're just too goddamn interesting. And, you know, when you put a question to the two of them, sometimes you put a question, and look, the post-match interview scene is changing a little bit in the GA at the minute, and there's a lot of backs to the wall stuff. I've been kind of talking about this in the last little while. You know, a manager standing there literally with his back to the wall and five or six microphones and a couple of cameras in his face. Morris Brosnan and John Fogarty did a nice piece on this a couple of weeks back. And what you're getting is, at times, a bit of tetchiness. At times, you're getting a bit of gold dust, the piggery line the last day. You're getting a bit of interaction, which I really enjoy. And kind of the beauty of what we have in Gaelic games. And maybe Jim McGuinness doesn't think it, but like, some of the people asking questions here are actually coaching or playing, you know, at a decent level, or are very interested in the game, or have been covering it for years. And there's a thirst for a depth, I think, around Gaelic games, a depth of knowledge and a bit of insight into what's going on. And, you know, I think you'll hear it now with Cathair O'Kane, who is still playing to a very high level and is interested in coaching as well. Cara was sitting beside me when Jim obviously had the bite back about their setup in the All-Ireland final last year. I wasn't at the Armagh Donegal game, but I listened. This helped me now on my drive home from RD back to Clare yesterday. I managed to listen to the McGuinness and McGeaney press conferences, and it was the most entertaining 25 minutes of all the 3 hours of audio I listened on the way home. So have a listen here to Kieran McGeaney, Cathair putting a couple of questions to him from the Irish News.
Do you think that filtered in a wee bit, Keane? You mean, you went for goals today, and is that part of the noise? And I'm not saying you are,
no,
but is, see, it part of the noise get seeps into the changing room?
But like, say against Galway, we had four goal chances blocked, right? And Roscommon, whatever it was four again, because that was if we're not going for goals. But again, listen, it's my fault because I give you the headlines, but like, it's you're so better, you must be going get that McGeaney out there and we get something paper. So like,
how much of it's fortune, in the sense that, like, I don't know that Oisin could have done a wild pile more with the penalty. Like, it was a brilliant save.
They could have scored it. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh. I haven't scored too many myself, so.
We were frustrated against the win last week in terms of timekeeping and stuff. Just Tomas's time, is it substitution? It was a.
You can't talk about referees, fellas.
No, but.
It's like, you get more headlines on me referees. The readers, just so they know, they think that we come out and start talking about referees. Like, gather around everybody here and start talking about referees and give them a hard time.
And the best of
you, do you think the timekeeping was real? I did. Did you think it was really hard? Suddenly the headline is McGeaney gives out a bit of this here. Like, as you know, fellas, there's idiots out there, love writing about me. They're infatuated by me, so they just seem to want to get those things. So stop asking.
I think it's great to play that that audio because you see the comments written down and it's like, oh God, Geezer was in bad form there yesterday. He really doesn't like the media. But when you actually hear his tone of voice there, you know he's actually having a pretty good time there in the tunnel. Jim McGuinness maybe a little bit more of a straight shooter when it comes to his dealings with the media. McGeaney kind of likes a bit of jousting over and back with Cara and your colleagues.
Go on.
Just because we want to get onto the hurling in a moment, just give us a quick top line on what happened in Division 2 yesterday, because I know you were at the Louth game.
Yeah, a couple of big results. Cavan potentially giving themselves a lifeline. The Beckle there wasn't the greatest game of football, but Cavan got a big win there. Cavan had fallen short in a couple of games. Cork with a massive win against Meath that have put them right in contention for promotion back to Division 1. James O'Donoghue had a great line on the football pod this morning about Chris Oak-Jones. He said he'd lie, he'd cheat, he'd steal his way for a goal chance. He's a bit like Pippo and Zaggy. And I think he's dead right. And Chris Oak-Jones took his chance at the weekend. The Meath forwards missed their chances for goals, the majority of them. And Cork got a big win there. The other two results, Derry gave Offaly a right clip and Offaly are on the way down to Division 3. And I was at Loudoun Tyrone. Interesting game. There's loads of post-match coverage up and off the ball. All I'll give you is that these two gave a clinic in how to play against the wind, not so much with the wind. And yeah, there's a little bit to learn from that if anyone can get eyes in that game. But the best part about it was played in Park for RD. You'd only get 2,800 in here. It's raw. It's, you know, lovely facilities, but the crowd getting on top of each other and the referee and the teams themselves. And it just added to the absolute atmosphere. And I just think the more games we can get in grounds like that around the country, and RD have done a great job in Park Fir with what they have and their facilities, and, you know, three in a row county champions there. They were very proud to show it off the last day. And that kind of enticed me to go up to watch that game. A lot more than going to maybe a big empty stadium at this time of the year. I think we need a bit of that.
Stephen Doyle, give us the hurling scores from the weekend.
Yes, indeed. Well, Kilkenny needed a late winner to see off Waterford in Division 1A of the National Hurling League. Keen Kenny's Free completed a comeback for the Cats, who came away from Nolan Park with a 121-120 victory. Meanwhile, Galway got their first win of the year. They were too good for Offaly and emerged as 223-18 point winners, while the All-Ireland champions Tipperary fell to a second defeat of the season in Division 1A. Limerick led from start to finish and came out on top by 36-21 at Semple.
What about Kildare versus Clare, Mick?
Yeah, it was very wet, very rainy. Got in there too late to get into the main stand for the first half.
Amateur. Rookie mistake.
Stood in the absolute drenching rain in the, the lower terrace. It was roadworks in Newbridge, it turns out. Anyway, once I did get into the main stand, where my sister had kindly kept me a seat, but that wasn't good enough for the steward, I got in there for the second half, and my God, it's a lovely new stand, actually.
Firing shots at the good volunteers at the GAA.
Well, I think there's a lot to be commended to the good volunteers at the GAA, and then I think some of them like the power, so there you go. That's all I have to say. I know, I'm only joking, of course. Sort of. It was very wet. can I go back at that, right? Clare were...
Are you blaming them for the weather, are you?
Clare didn't play very well. You kind of felt they would turn it around. Clare were leading for a good old portion of the game. Big crowd there from Clare, right? That definitely filled the place up. But there was also a big home crowd at a hurling match in Kildare. Like, the last time I saw Kildare hurl in person was, I think, the third of Clare's three in a row in the under-21s, the kind of Tony Kelly, Shane O'Donnell era. They beat Wexford in the final, and before that the B final was on between Roscommon and Kildare, and it's about maybe 12 years ago. And I remember thinking, like, you know, God, it'd be great to see one of these counties. They've got some good hurlers. You know, all that patronising thing, you say, oh, they've got some good hurlers, it's played at a much slower level and stuff like that. And then we are seeing a decade later them playing at the same level. Now, I don't think come championship there's, you know, that much of a competition, but they've got some really, really good players, and they're really confident, and they're a good team to watch, and they're a good team. You get the impression that they believe in themselves, and I was very impressed by them. I was very impressed. They actually shot the game away in the end. They'll be very disappointed they didn't win it, because they had the chances to win it. They really shot poorly in the second half, but the atmosphere was brilliant, and you would just love to see that. You would just love to see that ground be full constantly for Kildare home games, and it feeling like something is happening in the county, and it be a sustainable thing that Kildare Hurling is at, you know, on its way to the top level.
Okay.
Brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
Tommy Rooney, we're going to have to leave it there, but people check out the football pod, which is available now. What do you want to say?
just mentioned because they've got a lot of heat on the wrong side of things over the last couple of weekends. Antrim Hurlers and the Antrim Footballers both won at the weekend, so I just think it's worth noting that.
And the Antrim Camogie team beat Cork for the first time in however long they
massive,
have. So
right.
what a
massive results.
Okay.
Yeah, so just worth noting that, and we'll leave you with that.
Tommy Rooney, thank you very much. Stephen Doyle, do you want to run us down through the last story very quickly?
Yeah, just give you the Premier League details. Manchester United, of course, playing against Tottenham this evening. That game is kicking off at 8 o'clock. Manchester United looking for the win that would take them up to fourth position in the table. Just have a quick look at the teams there. United starting with Mbeumo up front, Acuna, Fernandes and Diallo behind him, with Mainoo and Casemiro midfield. Shaw, Maguire, Yoro and Dallo in the back four, with Lammens in goal. No Jacob Bryan, of course, for Everton, serving that suspension. And who is on the bench there? It's for Seamus Coleman's on the bench for Everton, with Pickford in goal, Garner, Tarkowski, Keane, Brantwaite, Irabunam, Gay, Armstrong, Chisbury, Holm, Endai and Barry. Time for the North London Derby quickly. 4-1 defeat, of course, for Tottenham at home against Arsenal. Tottenham targeting the summer, Berchiese and Victor Gyökeres both scoring a double. Here's some audio of Igor Tudor speaking after the game, the Spurs boss.
No, we didn't need this game, for sure. But this happened in this moment. You know, this team is Arsenal, probably the best team now in the world in this moment. So it was not easy. Oh, I can also give to us excuse, because if we was thinking today that is derby, and derby can give something more. I also play a lot of derby. I was coach also derby. For sure, the derby give you something more, but mentality, of motivation. But there are also other things that you cannot change in 3-4 training. It's impossible. So it's the team who is built by years, choosing the right players, and working hard on the mentality.
Tottenham boss Igor Tudor there. We'll have more on this with Kevin Kilbane on the Football Show after 9 p.m. Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for Monday's extended news round. As ever, Mick, you'll be back with us on the Football Show after 9. We're going to get over to Ben very shortly as well, who's going to be giving us continuous updates from the Rovers Dundalk game throughout the evening. We'll take a quick break.